on the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, can businesses cite religious objections and refuse paying for contraception in the new healthcare plan? Or do individuals lose their religious liberty rights when they go into business? Elena Rodriguez talks with Montserrat Alvarado from the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty about this week's Hobby Lobby oral arguments at the U.S. Supreme Court. Also, Dan Burke talks with Tim Bush, the founder of the premier Catholic leadership conference, the Napa Institute. They'll talk about the mission and goals of the Institute, along with many other reasons that this conference has had such a significant impact on Catholic leaders in America. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with our producer Elena Rodriguez and Dan Burke, executive director of the Register. Thanks again for joining us. Our first guest, Maria Montserrat Alvarado, joined the Beckett Fund in 2009 to help run the Voices Symposium Conference in Mexico City. She was elevated to her current position in 2010, and she leads initiatives in development communications, events and conference planning, and administrative financial management. Today, of course, we're going to be talking about the latest developments in the Hobby Lobby case. Monse, welcome to Register Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are delighted that you are with us, Monse. This is Elena. On March 25th, the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the case of two businesses, Hobby Lobby and the Conestoga Wood Specialties. Now, both businesses had sued the Obama administration on September of 2012 against the Health and Human Services mandate because the mandate forces these businesses to pay for contraception, sterilization, and abortion-inducing drugs. And so, both of these businesses object because it violates the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Now, the question for the Supreme Court here in this case is to decide if businesses have a right to oppose paying for contraception, citing religious objections. So if individuals have religious rights and individuals make up businesses, then why would businesses not have religious rights like individuals do?
That's a very good question. I think that the question before the court is exactly that. And if we take a step back, we can really get a good picture of what the Green family is asking the court to do for them. Ever since the Greens started Hobby Lobby in their garage, their religious beliefs have guided them to do good for their employees. Today, they start their employees at 90% above minimum wage. They close their stores early in the evening, and they close on Sundays in order to protect their employees' family time. And they provide Cadillac-level health benefits. And they also respect the right of their employees to purchase whatever drugs or devices they want. The only thing that they're asking for here is not to be forced to pay for benefits that violate their own religious beliefs. So we all have rights, and I have the right to free speech. But that doesn't give me the right to force you to have me on your show, right?
So yes.
The Greens are asking for the exact same thing. They just want to continue providing excellent benefits to their employees without violating their own very deeply held religious principles.
Well, even if the Religious Freedom Restoration Act is the law of the land right now, do you think the court's ruling would allow the Obama administration to get away with passing laws that burden religious freedom?
You know, Justice Kennedy noted something really important at oral argument about exactly that point. He said that our first freedom should not be left in the hands of government bureaucrats. And that's essentially what's going on here, is government agencies, specifically the IRS and HHS, deciding who gets religious liberty without any reference to the Constitution or to RFRA, which we all know was passed with great bipartisan support and under Clinton's administration. So they're basically saying that for churches, okay, that's fine. We'll give them an exemption. They begrudgingly gave churches an exemption. And now they're looking at family businesses and they're saying no. And they're looking at nonprofit organizations and they're saying, maybe. So again, I think that he was right on point when he said that our first freedom and our religious freedom should not be left in the hands of government bureaucrats.
And another item the judges have been talking about during the oral arguments is the topic of a distinction between closely held family companies on one side, and then on the other side, publicly traded large corporations. Why would the court want to create a distinction between the two?
I can't speculate too much on that, but the way that it looks like from the outside is they're recognizing, like they did when they brought in the example of the Little Sisters of the Poor, that these are organizations and individual businesses that do deserve some kind of an accommodation, that they do deserve to have their rights respected. So I honestly think that that's just an attempt to try to figure out how they can actually get this done.
I see. This is Register Radio, and our guest is Director of Development at the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, Montserrat Alvarado. Monse, our friend. We are talking about businesses citing religious liberty to oppose paying for government-mandated contraception in their basic health care plans. Monse, do you see a vulnerable or a breaking point in the Obama administration's legal stance here?
You know, oral argument was really very telling. It went very well. The court asked very serious questions, and the government was forced to concede that anyone starting a family business forfeits their religious freedom. That's what the mandate is telling them to do at this point, and that's what the government's position is. If you want to be a kosher butcher, that's fine, but the government can force you to violate the laws of kosher. If you want to be a religious bookseller, that's okay too, but the government can force you to sell materials that violate your religion. And it was very clear that this is an extremely skewed view of religious liberty. It's basically throwing religious liberty out the window.
Why is the Affordable Care Act forcing companies to pay for contraception instead of having, for instance, say, the government pay for it? I mean, in either case, it would be all of us paying for contraception, whether we are the employees of a company sharing in the healthcare costs or taxpayers sharing in a government-provided plan. But why the companies?
You know, I think that's a question that we're all asking ourselves, because we look at an individual business like Hobby Lobby, and we see a company that is not opposed to providing all of these services. They're actually only, well, all of these drugs, let me correct that. They're actually only opposed to four of the mandated drugs, four out of the 20. So they're more than happy to provide the 16 contraceptives. They're only objecting to the four that potentially threaten life, so the four that are abortifacients. And the one piece that none of us can understand is that the government has already created a bunch of exemptions for political reasons, and they've exempted many different kinds of businesses. So there is absolutely no reason why it cannot also give an exemption to protect religious liberty. Americans that should not be forced to sacrifice their freedoms so that they can provide a living for their families. They should not have to check their religious liberty at the door the moment that they start making a profit.
Right. Well, we expect the court's ruling probably in late June, right?
Yes, in late June.
Do you see that ruling setting a precedent, or maybe at least deciding the outcome of the other four HHS lawsuits for the for-profit employers?
I think that this decision, obviously we can't speculate too much about what's going to happen. We're very hopeful because of argument, but if they do rule in the favor of Hobby Lobby, it does have the potential to help the other for-profit cases. The nonprofit cases that are currently in court won't necessarily be affected depending on how the ruling comes out. But we're hopeful this will provide relief for our for-profit companies.
So definitely the category for-profit versus non-for-profit is a substantial difference here in how the Supreme Court is looking at these cases.
Exactly. And it's that difference that exists because the government has created a difference in how it wants to exempt individuals. And who it's choosing actually does have religious freedom rights.
But they're all individuals with individual liberties, equal, under the Constitution.
Definitely, and under RFRA. These are protected rights that we're fighting for at the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I'm having a little bit of a hard time understanding why some corporations or some groups may have religious rights and others may not. But
we have the same trouble here as well. I mean, if you look at HHS Mandates Central, which is the website that we have on BeckettFund.org, it tracks all of the cases, and it shows you how the nonprofit cases are doing, how our class action lawsuit cases are doing, and how our for-profit cases are doing. And at this point, tracking them is one of the hardest pieces because everyone's asking for the same right, and they're being treated very differently. So we're being very careful there.
Yeah, and that is an excellent resource online. Would you please repeat the website for our listeners?
Sure. It's BeckettFund.org. That's BeckettFund.org. And right when you get on our site, there's HHS Mandate Central. And it has all of the information where you can track the cases and where they are currently in the court system.
Thank you very much for putting up all those resources there. This is Register Radio, and we are talking about the oral arguments in the Hobby Lobby and Conestoga Wood Specialties oral arguments this week with Montserrat Alvarado from the Beckett Fund. Monse, would you say protecting religious freedom is sort of a guarantee in also protecting other basic individual and collective freedoms? I mean, what is the ripple effect here if religious liberties are not respected?
Of course. At the Beckett Fund, we believe that religious freedom is the cornerstone of all of our First Amendment freedoms, freedom of expression, freedom of assembly. If you don't have the right to express what is in your heart and what is in your mind and what motivates you as an individual, you have lost your ability to participate in the public square. You've lost your ability to share that with others. So we definitely believe that this is a foundational liberty, and that's why it's the one thing that we work on every day when we come into the office, and we focus on defending religious freedom with laser-like precision. We don't take any other cases.
And in the oral arguments this week, also it seems the 8 justices in the Supreme Court are divided by gender. Is this really a gender issue, or is that an excuse to distract the conversation about religious liberties?
I think the media really has taken this up as an issue that and framed it as a gender issue because there's really nothing else to say. It's such an obvious thing that religious freedom is a right that should be protected. There is no story behind this. This is a religious freedom case. It has nothing to do with women's access to contraception. It has only to do with a family that is trying to express their religious freedom in the business that they own. They don't have shareholders. They don't share their profits with anyone. They're a company that takes care of their employees because they feel like they should treat them the way that God has asked them to treat them. It's very, very basic and very simple. So when you have something that's so crystal clear, there you have to add something in order to be able to tell a good story that keeps the media and keeps people involved in watching television.
And for our listeners who are not familiar with this, but the Beckett Fund, which Montserrat Alvarado joining us today is a representative of the Beckett Fund. The Beckett Fund is also representing EWTN in its legal challenge to the HHS mandate coming from the non-for-profit group's stance.
Yes.
You were just talking about the importance of religious liberties, and Montserrat, our very own Michael Warsaw, our CEO of EWTN here, said regarding the March 25th oral arguments that they represent a critical moment in the fight to stop the government's unconscionable HHS mandate.
Mr. Warsaw is an incredibly brave man. He has been fighting this. I mean, I think it's been 2 years now that he's been working on this case and really trying to make it clear that when you participate in business and when you participate in and as something as simple as communicating news to individuals and to a good audience, you should also have the right to express your religious freedom and to live according to your values.
Exactly. And Michael Warsaw also said, while we await the Supreme Court's decision, EWTN and the state of Alabama are moving forward with our own case against the mandate. And he asked of all the EWTN family members around the world to continue to keep this matter in their prayers. So we join in prayers for all of the companies right now facing issues of religious liberty. And you can read more about Joan Frawley Desmond's story on religious liberties at stake and this week's oral arguments by going to ncregister.com. Monse, thank you so much for joining us here on Register Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
When we return, we'll tell you about the Napa Institute, the premier Catholic leadership conference. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
Dr. Ray Guarendi talks about the National Catholic Register.
The Register is catechetical news. In other words, it teaches the news from the perspective of the catechism. And you can learn all kinds of good things about the church and faithful living through the Register. They cover a wide, wide range. Catechesis, explaining the faith, what's going on in the world, in the Vatican. Good, solid Catholic journalism. The Register helps people cut through the spin. There's no spin in the Register. It is faithful Catholic teaching, analyzing of the news from a Catholic perspective.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Elena Rodriguez and Dan Burke, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Tim Bush, is the founder of the Bush Firm, which specializes in high net worth estate planning, real estate, and business transactions and tax. He's also the founder and CEO of Pacific Hospitality Group, a hotel development and management company which owns and manages 7 hotels. Since 1990, Tim has been an active member of Legatus. He's also a member of the board of Christ Cathedral Corporation in the Diocese of Orange, California. Tim is a co-founder of the Magis Institute with Father Robert Spitzer, which sponsors spiritual ministries. And in 2011, Tim and Father Spitzer co-founded the Napa Institute, an annual intellectual apostolic conference. Tim, welcome to Register Radio.
Glad to be here.
Tim, it's great to have you with us to talk in specific about the Napa Institute and the conference coming up this July. But I wanted to begin with a little bit about the mission. What is the essential purpose of the Napa Institute? How did it come about?
Well, it's preparing Catholics for the next America. And I've been thinking about this idea of a conference to help form lay and ordained Catholic leaders for some time. And it came to me through my good friend Archbishop Charles Chaput, who wrote an article in First Things about our culture is changing to a secular society, which everybody's aware of. And as a result, we need to prepare Catholics to survive in that society and to defend Catholicism in that culture. And that's what the conference is intended to do.
And you have five goals related to achieving that mission, which includes deepening Catholic leaders in the teachings of the Church and so on. Tell us a little bit about each of those goals and how that's accomplished through the conference.
Yeah, first of all, everyone is welcome, but we really try to target people who are existing Catholic lay or ordained leaders, or people who are considering leadership in the Church or at schools or universities. So that's our target audience. We have several different aspects of it, how we do it. First, we have academic and challenging presentations, but they're very short, 30 minutes, no questions or answers. All of that is taken care of during the social time when you can approach the speaker or a bishop or a priest and talk about a subject further. And so we have 31 different presenters, and sometimes we have multiple presentations going on at the same time, so you have options for your interest. And we have three themes every year: Always Reason and Faith, which Father Spitzer's Magis Institute focuses on. This year he's talking more about the proofs of the existence of God, using astrophysicists, using himself, who was a philosopher. We have economic justice, which is really a time appropriate with Pope Francis talking about the responsibilities of capitalists towards society. And then we have beauty and art. The forgotten, you know, the Church has been the keeper of art since the Renaissance, and we're somewhat abandoning that. So we're trying to resurrect or reinvite people to that. Again, another goal is to expose people to ministries. We have sponsors, which help us financially, but more importantly, they expose people to the new movements, Focus, Augustine Institute, the St. John's Bible, the various Catholic universities, Wyoming Catholic, Ave Maria, so on. So we have usually about 20 sponsors, and it allows our attendees to meet with those sponsors and learn what they're doing and see if it's something they want to get involved with through their time, treasure, or talent.
I wanted to circle back to something that's very unique about the Institute and the conference, and that is that you mentioned talking after the talk. In typical speaking events, you have a speaker, they get up and talk, and then they disappear. You've got a little different model, don't you?
Yes, we encourage, in almost every case, the speakers stay for the entire event. So often, these are high-profile speakers that give 50 or 60 speeches a year. They come in, give their speech, and they're out on the next airplane. And we want them to be part of the conference, first of all, to experience for their own spiritual formation, but also to exchange ideas among these Catholic lay and ordained leaders. So it's really an opportunity for everybody who wants to be part of the mission of the Catholic Church to get together once a year and touch base on what opportunities are available, what's happening, how can we work together. It's a very entrepreneurial type of arrangement.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio, and we're speaking with Tim Bush, the founder of the Napa Institute, which is an extraordinary conference that happens every year now, bringing about the formation of Catholic leaders and really infusing in them and encouraging them to do even more for the Church, with the Church, in and through the Church. Tim, another thing that's been interesting about these events is the absolutely amazing liturgy that you provide. Is it five masses a day?
At least. I say there's probably over 30 liturgies that occur during the course of the weekend. Now, obviously, you don't go to all the liturgies. Usually, people go to one at a minimum a day, starting on the Thursday opening mass. But we have two liturgies that are celebrated by prelates, a cardinal or a bishop, one in the morning, one at night. So you usually go to one of those, although you can go to more. And then we have liturgies throughout the day, also in various traditions. We begin the morning with the Tridentine Mass, and we have the Latin Novus Ordo Mass. We have the English Novus Ordo Mass. We have the Ukrainian Order Mass. These are all Masses that most people never see, but they're part of the our tradition. You know, they're different parts of the Roman Catholic tradition, and it's so important that we get exposed beyond just the Mass we see at our Sunday parish, and see that there's other opportunities. First, we have adoration throughout the conference. We have the rosary, the we have several spiritual directors, and we have special retreats. We have different priests of different traditions, the Jesuit tradition, Opus Dei tradition, Legionnaires tradition, Dominican tradition. So we've got everything that you can sort of get yourself exposed to what's going on in the church, so it's not monolithic. So this is a critical element of our program, is to make sure that people leave enhanced and enriched as to their spirituality.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio. We're talking with Tim Bush about the Napa Institute conference coming up this July. Tim, tell us a little bit about the environment of the conference, which I think also provides a great place of rest and peace in the midst of all of this powerful infusion of faithful liturgy and great ideas.
Well, that's an incredible part of the formula as well, is we're settled in the Meritage Resort and Spa, which is a resort that I built beginning 7 years ago, and it has its own chapel that's approved by the Diocese of Santa Rosa, where we allow priests, when the conference is not going on, to stay for free and celebrate Mass for us. We have 40 acres with vineyards, trails. Every room has a rosary, a Bible, and a crucifix in it. And we during the time, we have extraordinary cuisine, wine, of course, because we're in the Napa Valley. And it's just a great opportunity for social engagement. We don't have seating assignments where people have to, you know, the hierarchy is sitting one table, everybody else kind of goes where they can meet together. As a matter of fact, one night we have a international cooking program where each bishop will sit with 20 of the attendees, and they'll have a different style of food that will be cooked by their chef. So it's an opportunity to enjoy each other and get to know each other in fraternity. And at night we have at 9 o'clock, and then hundreds of people will come out there with cigars, wine, dessert, and they talk and engage, and sometimes till midnight. It's a very unusual experience when most people, after the event, they dash off to bed and go to sleep. Here, they're continuing to be engaged. It's very intense 4 days.
And Tim, from a personal standpoint, what I've found is that everyone who attends the Institute, really, when you look them in the eye, you're looking at a friend in the faith. You're looking at someone who's deeply committed to the church and deeply committed to building the kingdom of God. And I've just found it refreshing from that standpoint.
Yeah, you know, Al Cresta did his program from the Napa Institute last year, and I thought it was a huge success, Tim.
Yes, he does it. He'll be there again this year. And, you know, we're all in a different part of our pilgrimage and journey here on earth, but we all want what's right. We want to be holy. We want to be saints. And you wouldn't come to the program unless you had that inspiration. So when you see others who are able to accomplish this, when you open your eyes to other things that are going on in the church beyond your little world, you start to realize how rich the Catholic tradition is. And so often in our country, we, as Catholics, we're humble, but we don't stand up for our faith as other major religions do. We kind of just want to get along. And instead of standing up for who what we stand for pro-life, for pro-marriage, these are things that are very important to us, and we cannot let the culture tell us what we're supposed to believe in. This is where we're preparing Catholics for the next America.
So, Tim, as we wrap up our time today, tell folks just about a few of the speakers that we expect to engage with at this event this summer and where they can find out more.
Well, they can find out more by going to our website. Just type in or Google Napa Institute, or just go to www.napa-institute.org. But if you just type in Napa Institute, Google will transfer it to you. We have one of the more amazing revelations. We've got Cardinal Levada, who will be speaking in the Reason of Faith Day. He is the highest-ranking Catholic in the history of the Church. He took Cardinal Ratzinger's place when he became Benedict XVI as the prefect of the Congregation of the Doctrine of Faith. We have Father Spitzer, who is always one of our perennial speakers, Dr. Tim Gray from Augustine Institute, Stephen Barr, who's an astrophysicist, and Cardinal James Harvey will be celebrating our initial Mass. He is a former prefect of the papal household under now St. John Paul II for 7.5 years, and the prefect under Benedict XVI until the very end of his papacy, 2 months before he resigned and handed the title over to Archbishop Kanzlein. So this is the first time he's been out in public, and we're looking forward to having him there for the entire conference. Archbishop Wenzke from Miami will be speaking as well, and Archbishop Chaput talking about economic justice. So I can go on and on, but the website has all of these. We have 12 bishops, 2 cardinals, 25 priests, 20 religious sisters already registered, already coming. They're the president of the U.S. CCB, the conference, Jerome Kurtz. Archbishop Jerome Kurtz there as well. So it's going to be very exciting. If you're interested in your faith and in your church, it's going to be there on steroids.
Well, Tim, I think we couldn't recommend this more, EWTN and the Register. It's really an amazing event, and for those who are in leadership roles and or desiring to give more or are desiring to learn how to deepen their faith to better fuel their passion and pursuit of building the kingdom of God, there's really no better place than the Napa Institute. So thank you for all you're doing for the church, and we hope that many of our listeners will be interested and check it out.
Thank you very much.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for that microphone picture to listen to or download the show. Thanks again for joining us this time on Register Radio. For Elena, Dan, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.